Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for May 19th. It's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and back from yet another vacation is Jim, the Sun Man, Allen. How you doing, bud?
Hold on. Another vacation? Yes, I had one last year. And I had one this year.
I'm counting your surgery, your little procedure, as a mini vacation because you got to sit around and do nothing.
I got to sit around and study coding in Ruby.
Yeah, that's R&R.
And I should have been doing I could have been doing more valuable things, I guess, and, you know, watching videos or something, or baseball.
Oh, baseball, or both. All right. Well, yeah, I'll try to take some vacation later this year and catch up with you.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Good man. That's a reasonable ambition, but yeah, feeling good and well rested. How you been?
I've been okay. I've been out to QVC Marine Field where I got to talk to Luis Cruz this past week. He's with the Lotte Marines, a newcomer this year, and we'll hear that on the show. And also, we're going to discuss the start of the interleague session. We're going to respond to a great listener question and more. So let's get started.
Clearing the bases.
All right. This week's trivia question comes from our buddy, our friend of the program, Dave in Baltimore. You remember meeting him at Tokyo Dome, right?
Of course.
All right.
Of course.
He sent the question in, but he also ruined it for me by sending the answer in the same email file. So anybody who in the future decides that they want to send over an email trivia question, send the answer in a separate file.
Don't read until you're halfway through the show.
Right. All right. So the question is, and I did check it, and I think he's right. I couldn't find any more players. There are three players who are still active who wore the Yokohama Taiyo Whales uniform when the team was called that. Name two of them.
Wow. Still active. Not coaches.
Active players.
I can name two. Yoshihito Ishii and Daisuke Miura are two.
Ishii. No. Ishii is not one of them. He joined the team in 97, and I think
that's 90, correct.
91
okay.
was the last year that they were called Whales.
92 was the first year of the Bay Stars,
I think. 91 was the last year of them being called the Whales. So no, that's not correct. So
okay. So then I've got two, which is Takashi Saito, who I thought was the third, and Miura, who is obvious. So who's the other one?
The other one is the guy I call on Twitter, I call him Catcher Skipper.
Okay, Moto.
Motonobu Tanishige of the Chunichi Dragons. So yeah, so that was a great question, Dave. I knew you'd get that one, Jim, because I knew you would be all over that one.
I should have gotten Tanishige. Obviously, the guy's he's still active. I mean, he does still catch and he does still get a hit. Got an RBI the other day, so yeah. Actually, I missed him.
Yeah, well, you know, you only had to get two out of three, so that means you got the answer right. Congratulations,
wow, sir.
Job well done.
Pat on the back, Aaron.
All right. So, thanks a lot, Dave, and we'll have a question from him later.
Dave from Baltimore.
Yeah, we'll have a question from him later. Now, on Tuesday, I went out to QVC Marine Field, the place I like to call the Q, and I talked to Luis Cruz. And look, we talked for like 10 minutes before we started the interview, and we talked for about 30 to 40 minutes after the interview. So I think I had a whole hour with him, and we were just talking. I mean, it was really fun. We're talking about baseball, talking about the changes that he's going through in Japan. And I wish I had the tape recorder on the whole time and just edited out all the other stuff. But once some of the information, of course, was not fit for airing. But
it happens.
Yeah, it happens. It happens. But
tell me about that itch. Okay.
Well, nothing like that. But as you'll hear in the interview, he played with the LA Dodgers, had one really good year. And then he played with the Yankees a little bit and got injured again. And here we are in Chiba playing with the Marines. And, you know, I asked him about a lot of stuff. I mean, he's struggling to adjust. And most of the thing, one of the things we talked about after the interview was the fact that, and I wanted to bring this up on a show last year, and I just never did. It never seemed the right time. But remember, they were supposed to have outlawed these double clutch motions.
Right.
And so a lot of pitchers are still doing them. I mean, it's not, it's sure. like they forgot the rule and they're not enforcing it now. And so he said a lot of those
guys.
Well,
that's what happens in baseball. I mean, this is the norm that they just decide it's easier to ignore the rules than enforce them.
So it's really throwing him off because straightforward pitchers. And he said he likes facing the form pitchers a lot more because he knows what to expect for them. But some of the guys with the funky kicks and the hesitation moves are throwing him off, and it's all about his timing. When he feels good and comfortable at the plate, he's getting hits, and when he's struggling to get his timing down at the plate, then that's when he doesn't look so good. But he looked pretty good today because he hit a home run in the ninth inning on Sunday and got the Marines even, and then they rallied and ended up beating the Fighters up at Sapporo Dome by a run, 4-3. So he helped them out winning today. He had a double the day before on Saturday, but he got thrown out rounding third too far on what turned out to be an infield single. And so he got thrown out at third for the last out in the top of the 11th. And then the Fighters hit a home run in the bottom of the 11th to win the game. So he's having what, you know, the typical up and down situation that goes on with guys like this. But let's go ahead and take a listen to what he had to say.
All right, we want to thank Luis Cruz for taking the time to join us on the show this week. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you guys for having me here. And I'm just trying to do my best here.
All right, it's a pleasure to have you on. Now, you played with the Dodgers, and then you went to the Yankees, and that's a long way from Chiba. What was your plan to continue your career?
You know what? Last year, I had a chance to be the starting third baseman for the Los Angeles Dodgers, and I mean, I had a really good year in 2012. And last year, it was like a lot of, not problems, but like a lot of stuff off the field that I wasn't concentrated 100%, and I asked like to get like a chance to go see my dad because my dad was kind of like feeling a little sick, and they say, oh, if you go, I mean, we need to put somebody on your spot.
Right.
So basically, my head wasn't on baseball last year, and I mean, that's not an excuse. I had to perform because that's my job, but it didn't work how I was planning to work, and they took me off the 40-man in June 29th, I think. Mm-hmm. And after that, I feel a little bit weird, and just told my wife that I want to take the time off because I wasn't ready mentally. And I didn't accept my assignment to AAA, and I just said, you know what, I'm gonna be a free agent. I take my free agency, and the next day, we were celebrating my kid's birthday at Disneyland, and my agent called me and said, hey, are you ready to play shortstop today? Oh, tomorrow? I'm like, what? I haven't played in 10, 15 days. He's like, oh, the Yankees want you to play shortstop tomorrow in Minnesota. I'm like, what?
Yeah, okay, I'm ready.
I'm ready. Let me start stretching right now. So, I mean, I went the next day to Minnesota, and I play for like the whole month. I play every day. My timing wasn't there. A lot of stuff wasn't there. And but I played good. I think I played good defense, and they was happy with my defense because as soon as I get there, Girardi say, hey, you know what, we want you to play your defense. You know, we know you can play defense. We need a shortstop and a third baseman, so you're going to play every day. So I play every day until in July 29th, I think. We were playing in Texas, and they hit a fly ball to the line. And I catch the ball, and I try to dive, and my spike gets stuck in the ground, and my knee. Have a MCL sprain grade 2. Like, I was about to break
right.
my knee. And
right.
It took me a month to start walking normal. And I was doing rehab in Tampa. And in August 27, they called me and said, you know what? I mean, we know you don't want to play anymore this year. And we need the roster spot. So we're going to take care of you the whole year, all your rehab and everything, but we're going to let you go. So I say, okay. So I went to Arizona, and I went to API, there's performance and training and everything. So I did my rehab for, I think it took me 4 months to start like running and playing in the game. So I have a lot of offers in America, but I was like AAA contract. Like, oh, you can go to AAA, and then if you win the job in sprint training, you can go. But but I've been in that situation for like 6 years. So I'm like, you know, I just turned 30, and I'm kind of wanna, you know, go somewhere else where they let me play and just be me, you know?
Right.
Because even if I stay in America, I probably make the team. I'm the last guy on the bench, so I never gonna play anyways. So I just turned 30. I think I'm in the age where I have to keep playing, so I keep getting better, you know?
Right.
And I mean, I had this offer from these guys, and I was talking to Rakuten, and I talked to my family, and my mom, my dad didn't want me to come. He said, oh, you're still too young, and you can play in America. And I know I can play in America, but I didn't feel like going back to AAA, you know, right. and all that. And so we talked to these guys, and we agreed to a one-year guarantee, and we have an option for next year. I mean, I think it's a very good option. And I just say, you know what? I'm going to take it.
Excellent.
So we take it, and all the families here just trying to adjust to all this.
All right. Now, I remember hearing about stories about you in the minor leagues, and someone told you to just be aggressive at the plate. Now, who told you that, and how did it change your approach?
In the minor leagues, you say?
Right.
A lot of guys, well, my dad is my biggest teacher. He plays for 17 years in Mexican League. Mm-hmm. And when I was coming up to the minor leagues, all my coaches want me to just spread out and be like slap hitter, you know? Mm. And my dad's like, you know what, I'm sorry. Mm. You have a really good defense. But if you hit like that, you're never going to make it to the big league. Even if you make it to the big leagues, you're going to be like a slap hitter. And look at you. I'm 6'1", 6'1 and a half, 210. You have power.
Yeah.
So in 2011, he was my hitting coach in winter ball. That's when I was with the Brewers. They only gave me like 17 at-bats.
Right.
So he said, we got to try this. We got to be more aggressive and swing hard and get a little bit of leg kick so you can have a rhythm and everything. So I have a really good year on winter ball. I won the MVP and everything. And I came to spring training with the Dodgers, and I hit like 320 with home run and 10 RBIs.
Right.
So they kind of like, the last day before opening day, they say, you know what, we don't want to keep you here because we don't have a roster spot, but you can play for us anytime. So I'm like, okay. But I went to AAA, and I started doing really good, and they then called me up in June, and I ended up hitting 298 with 300 at-bats, 6 home runs, and 40 RBIs in the big leagues.
Yep.
And since that year, I think that's when I start hitting the ball hard everywhere instead of just slapping the ball.
So then you come to Chiba, and you sign this contract, this one-year deal, and now you play here in the preseason and in the regular season. What was your reaction to these fans here?
Oh, my God. I mean, that's cool, but it's a lot. It's a little bit too much, you know? Like, I can't believe I'm in the fifth inning there, and my legs are kind of tired, and I look over there, I'm like, there's no way they have more energy than me. Like, they've been jumping up and down since 6 o'clock, and that's unbelievable. But it feels good because it's different than America when you know you're having a bad game or you make an error or something.
Right.
You hear a lot of boos.
Right.
Here's like, I mean, they always got your back, you know?
Mm.
Like, you're going to hit, they always cheer for you. You make a play, they cheer for you.
Mm.
So I think it's a very good atmosphere because they make you feel comfortable and welcome.
Now, this team doesn't seem to have a lot of power hitters. So what's a important key for them going through the season?
Yeah, we definitely don't have a lot of power hitters. But I think we have some young guys that they can play the little game, you know, but we have a lot of young guys that they're going to be good and fast guys.
Mm.
I think for us, the big thing is I think we got a good pitching. We're starting pitching, so we got to play good defense. So if we score 1, 2, 3 runs, we can win a game, you know?
Right.
Because, like you say, only guy, maybe Saburo or Iguchi, that's the only guys that really have power. Like, I don't consider myself a power hitter. I like to hit doubles and singles. But, I mean, we got to play hard every night because you never know and how we're going to win a game.
Now, the rookie, Seiya Inoue, they call him Aja. He had a good spring, and the media really jumped on the bandwagon, and they were all over him. But what did you see in his swing, and what do you think he needs to develop?
I mean, I think he got a good power, and he have unbelievable spring training. Like, everything he hits, it was like homer or double or hard contact. But I think, I don't know, I think he was too young still to, you know, like to be in the, throwing in the fire. And I think he needs to, like, keep working in his holes, what he got, and try to hit the ball the other way instead of trying to, you know, like, hit home runs every time. And I think he's going to be a good player because he got power. I mean, he works hard. And I just think he needs a little bit of experience.
Yeah, that's what I said. I know he has a hitch in his swing too that I think pitchers probably discovered right away.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, spring training, it's nobody can get him out. Like,
right.
Like if you see him, oh, he's gonna get a hit right now, and he did, like, everything. But I think once he starts facing like the number one starter from like one of these teams, like SoftBank, they have a really good pitching. That's kind of different than spring, you know, because spring training, a lot of people is working on stuff, but once everything counts, that's not many mistakes you can hit. So you have to look for your pitch and try to don't miss it.
All right, last question. Now, you've seen all the teams in the Pacific League, and you guys are pretty much right there with all those teams. But now you're going to start Interleague. What's your plan of attack for Interleague, and how the new teams that you're going to see?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think we got to keep playing, and we got to play these games hard. I think for me, this team is really good team, SoftBank, and we got to play these guys 110% because, I mean, I don't know any of those teams yet. We played the Giants one time spring training, and we played the Swallows one time, but I don't really know anything about all the hitters, all the pitchers, and I think it's going to be, for me personally, it's going to be like new experience because they don't know me and I don't know the pitcher, so we're just going to go, what he got, fastball, curveball, changeup, so I'm just going to think he's going to try to get me out with, because he never pitched me before and I never hit against those guys before, so it's going to be a battle, you know, and I think we got to be ready, like win these couple games, go to Sapporo and try to win a couple games and get a day off and try to fight.
Okay. All right. Well, good luck. We'll be watching.
Thanks, man. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you very much, Luis. And like I said, we talked about so many things, but what in this particular interview caught your ear?
Yes. Thanks, Luis. We haven't had a chance to talk. I've seen you out there. I've heard good things from a couple of your teammates, and I know the manager is very impressed with what he's seen. So, I am eager to get out and say hi, so I will do that. It was a very interesting. I really enjoyed listening to you guys go on and talk about some different things. And I was thinking about how, the whole transition to Japan and why you want to come to Japan and thinking how it used to be in the old days. I was talking with Tom O'Malley about this a week or so ago, and he said, yeah, you know, it used to be, it was the end of the career for big leaguers. You know, it was the kiss of death.
And, the end of the line, yeah.
And basically, if you went to Japan, you were finished. And I remember back around 1980, and Terry Whitfield, who'd been a regular outfielder for the San Francisco Giants, came and played a couple of years for the Cebu Lions, and then he came back to the majors with the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a couple of okay years, I guess their fourth outfielder. And it was a very unique thing at that time. you know, that a guy came back from Japan. Although I guess another great example is
Cecil Fielder is the guy who comes to mind for me.
Well, Davy Johnson was, I guess, the first one. Davy Johnson looked like he came with the Giants, and he didn't do anything over here. And he went back, and he just like picked up like he'd never, you know, he'd never been gone. And Casey McGee's doing that now. So
and Gabe Kapler didn't have any success here, but went back to the States and played a couple, three more years.
Sure, and of course Julio Franco, I understand, is still playing.
Yeah, I saw that today. Go Julio, come back here. We'll give you an AB.
Well, I'll tell you, they were saying he was, when he was still active with the Mets as a pinch hitter a couple of years back, they were saying he was 50. I mean, he's apparently, people are saying he's 3 years older than his baseball age.
Mm.
So he's probably 54 now, or probably about the same age.
Yeah, they listed him as 55 in the story that I saw, but yeah.
Wow. So anyway, thinking about that, and I was thinking about how he was eager to go. Luis said he was eager to go to some place where essentially he was wanted to be part of the program.
Mm.
You know, and it wasn't a, well, let's just wait and see. We've got a place for you if you don't mind waiting and seeing. And it made me think about how Japan has become as a place of last resort to a place that people actually, you know, there's a line of players, as we know, there's a line of players waiting to come to play in Japan.
Right, right. When the MLB played the opening games with the Seattle Mariners and the Oakland A's a few years back, I did a story in which I talked to Coco Crisp and I said, hey, look, what's the situation? It seems like a lot of guys are making Japan more of a destination instead of a last resort.
Mm.
And nobody likes to vacation at last resort, so. And he said, yeah, that's becoming a fact. And we talked to a few players. I remember Cameron Lowe pitched with the SoftBank Hawks. And he came over saying, hey, you know, he knew Japan was an option and he wanted to come here. He didn't last long, but he came.
Of course, one of the A's on that team was Akira Kaiwe, who's now with the Hiroshima Carp. So, yeah, it happens. It's pretty common. People are trying to get here. The minors essentially made me think of something that Bill James said about the free independent minors before Branch Rickey destroyed them by turning them into a farm. You know, Branch Rickey essentially made farm systems a mandatory thing for every team to have.
Mm-hmm.
So before then, Bill James said that trades between major and minor league teams were fairly common. And some players preferred to play in the minors simply because they felt they were treated better.
Mm.
And that made me think, I guess that was the thought that made me think that Luis Cruz, you know, basically he lost playing time because he was concerned about his dad. And he wanted someplace, you know, he wanted to play someplace where he was essentially respected for what he could do.
Right.
And, you know, here's Japan. So let's do that. And, you know, as people say, it's not, you know, and also you get the crowds. I mean, the crowds here, you know, they're major league crowds.
Definitely.
It's a major, you know, he's going not to a place where teams talk about developing skills and whatnot. He's going to a place where winning is absolutely the most important thing. And, you know, that these teams are here to win. They're not here to develop. I mean, the development is secondary.
Right.
You know, the overall goal, there will be days when you think this guy needs, I want to give this guy playing time. But you give him playing time now because you want to win more games this season, not because you want to sell him to the major leagues.
Right, right.
So.
Yeah, I'm glad that you said that because that was, I mean, the story of his decision to come to Japan and I just like talking to guys like this who have to fight for every AB, you know, I have to fight for every minute they can spend on the field because they appreciate it so much and they work hard to stay. I mean, they might not have success. I mean, nobody's guaranteed success. I always, you know, I told my teammates when we were playing basketball, I said, just because you work hard and just because you want it bad doesn't mean you're going to get it. But you still have to work hard and you still have to want it bad. You know, that's the two go hand in hand. And you see how hard these guys work and how much they want it. It doesn't always pay off. Like I said, he's hitting a little bit over 240. He's got four home runs now. He's got a few doubles. I mean, he's not doing great, but he's still getting playing time. He's still in the lineup and he's not on the farm team yet. And those are all positives. And as long as they keep, you know, we talked about after I turned the tape recorder off, we talked about defense and his playing defense. And I'm not sure how much they scouted him and how much they knew about him, but he's a pretty good defensive player.
Mm.
And so he said, well, you know, as soon as they saw me play defense a few times, they asked me to help Daichi Suzuki.
Mm.
And help him out and give him some pointers. And so he was talking, and he actually brought up the thing that I brought up on the show last year, was Suzuki going to his right is not very good, but Suzuki going to his left is really good. And so he's trying to give him some pointers and when to throw, how to position himself, get his footwork in order, when to cheat on batters who might end up pulling something toward the hole so he can get over there so he can throw from deep in the hole at short. So, I mean, we talked about all these things and it was fantastic. I really had a good time talking to him. I'm sorry I didn't play the whole thing.
Well, teach him to be Derek Jeter, which is you just stand in the hole and anything hit to your left is the duty of the second baseman to get. And then you can have everybody rave about your arm and how well you are going to your right.
Well, I tell you this, it was all the jumping throws that Jeter made from deep in the hole that got him all that that acclaim, I suppose.
He's got an arm. I mean, he's got a major league arm. He's got the skills, but anyway.
Yeah.
And you be in New York and you do enough well, they think you're the second coming or something. Second something or other.
Mm. So what else caught your ear there?
Well, now I think it was a very clear. I think first of all, he speaks very well and he communicates very well, which was, I mean, talking about how his father, you know, normally one doesn't want to take too much from one's parents in essence. Although obviously his father is a coach.
His father, he said, played for more than 10 years.
So, and he did coach him, and he did have some success with that approach. You never know what the eventual cost is, but you have to always be wary of people who tell you, you know, you should try to be less than you are. You know, you should try. It's sort of like Ichiro. Ichiro got that advice when he was, you know, don't try to be a big hitter. You're not a big hitter. You're a, you know, you shouldn't try. You know, when you hit a home run, they send him to the farm team.
Yeah, but I mean, in this case, his father said, "Hey, man, you got some size on you. You got some pop. Let's see you swing the bat." You know,
right. Well, I mean, I'm just saying that when the team tells you you should be a slap hitter, and you think you can do more than that, well, I mean, there's going to be times, but you know, you have to trust your instinct and you have to trust in your own abilities.
Mm.
And when the team's telling you to tone down your, you know, don't try to. I mean, I understand playing within your game, but. When they're trying, you know, you get a lot of this major league, a lot of development people. Jeremy Powell told me about how when he was he basically got to the major leagues on the strength of his curveball.
Right.
And then as soon as he got to the major leagues, they said, well, you're a big guy. You should be a fastball pitcher. You know, your fastball is what's going to get you to the major leagues, not to the, and your curveball is going to keep you in the minors. So they basically junked the curveball, made it his third pitch, and they put it on the shelf and he became a sinker slider guy. And then, he got to Japan, he's fooling around in the bullpen, and the coach said, the Kintetsu Buffalo's pitching coach says, hey, that's a heck of a curve. You know, you can make some money with that in Japan.
Mm.
So he took it off the shelf and put it back put it back to work, and he went pretty far with that thing.
Yeah, I don't, I sat next to him, I stood up with him. He's a big kid. I mean, he's not a little skinny slap hitter you would imagine who would play a middle infield or be a shortstop or whatever it is that he was playing early on in his career whenever he decided to make this change. But I just remember hearing this story about him deciding to make this change, and that's what got him to the big leagues. And he had a really good year in 2012 with the Dodgers, and I totally agree with the fact that, hey, if you're going to be up there at the plate and you're going to, if you have the size and you have the power, then you should be swinging. You should be aggressive in the batter's box. Mm. I mean, they're good. Obviously, guys who can play defense are valuable, but if you're just going to play defense and have everybody else essentially carry you with the bat, then, you know, at some point, people are going to start looking at you as the one who's easily replaced.
Well, that's the other thing is also that if you're, first of all, shortstops, I did a long story, I won't even bother why, but shortstops in Japan, the age at which most of the plays are made, the more plays are made by shortstops who are 23 years, I'm going to say 24 years old than any other age.
Wow.
And
that's pretty young. It's,
and it goes on, and I, you know, and so the most plays made by third basemen, I'm guessing, is 26, and is at the age of 26, and the most catchers is 25, and first baseman's like 32. So
because you can't find any 23-year-old first baseman.
Right, we don't see them very often.
That's where you get stuck.
They're making the most plays is obviously those are the guys who can make the most plays.
True.
More of those guys are making those plays and more likely to make those plays who are younger, meaning those skills, the skills that you need to play shortstop deteriorate very quickly. Your defense tends to deteriorate. It improves up till about the age you're 24 and then it starts declining. And if you're a hitter, it means you can stick around. And if you're a fielder, it means if you're not blessed with extreme speed, you know, you're going to be on the real short end of that.
Yeah.
So, if you've got the size and you've got an option, don't throw that away because somebody says you should concentrate on your defense and just try to go the other way.
Yeah, I'm not there.
Don't limit yourself.
I agree. But speaking of limits, the Marines look a little bit limited in their ability to climb in the Pacific League. Now, I didn't like them at the beginning of the season, and I'm not seeing any reason to start liking them now. You said before we started taping that you couldn't find anything that they were actually leading the league in that was anything positive, and I'm here to agree with you.
Well, I mean, I looked at the numbers through Saturday, and I do a runs created formula, which is, yeah, it's a very basic thing, but it basically assembles the different individual accomplishments, the number of doubles, triples, walks, outs, stolen bases, and so on, and gives you a fairly reliable indicator of how many runs a team should score.
Well, now, they do have a bunch of doubles.
Right. Okay, now if you compare the runs that, you know, what their opponents have done against them in the same way, and you compare those two numbers, their individual offensive and defensive accomplishments make them rank them as just barely better than the 11th best team in NPB, who are the Cebu Lions.
Oh, the Lions.
So, just to give you an example.
Yeah.
The Bay Stars hit 278 when they put the ball, the Bay Stars, excuse me, I'm already ranking them down there with the Bay Stars.
Well,
the Marines batted 278 when they put the ball in play. Their opponents are hitting 300, which is pretty bad. I mean, bad for the Marines defense. They've drawn 115 walks, which is close to the worst in the league. Their opponents have drawn 132, which is close to the most in the league. They've hit 29 home runs. Their opponents have hit 38. The only thing I can really think of is that since they have Ogino and Okada on the team, ostensibly on the team, although I think Ogino's hurt again, their team speed is not too shabby.
No, yeah, they've got some wheels. They've got some
and
speed.
Suzuki can run as well.
That's about all they
but have. Other than that, I can't find a single darn thing that they're really any good at. So I think the fact that they're the only thing you can like about the Marines is their record's been pretty good.
Yeah, they're only four games under 500, and they're about to take on the Central League, so that might up that record. Maybe they can get to 500. But I looked at some numbers, too, and check these out.
Check it out.
They have faced the largest or the highest number of batters, which means they're giving up a lot of hits and they're giving up a lot of walks.
Okay.
They have the fewest strikeouts except for the Lions, and these numbers I checked were as of Friday. And, you know, they hit the most batters. They give up the most run, or they were tied for most runs allowed.
It's just
a mess. I don't know how they're winning at the clip that they're winning at. I mean, they should be where the Lions are.
I'll tell you one thing they have been best at, and that is their opponents have made the most errors. When the Marines, and I think this may be due to the team's speed,
I would say the
opposition teams have made more errors than against any other team in the Pacific League. But other than that, I really can't find anything that they got going for them.
Yeah, I mean, they even have the highest ERA in the Pacific League. I don't know how they're only four games under 500. They won a game today. They probably, I mean, you know, I also, there's a site called the, well, it's the Newell data site that I always talk about. And
Null,
whatever they want to call it. They've ranked them as their quality start percentage, which is, they've had, and I don't know how they're doing this, but they have had 21 quality starts. I don't remember. I know Ishikawa's got a few. The kid I like to call Shoelace, Furuya has been pretty good. Wakui has actually been not bad his past 3-4 starts. He's kept the team in the game and given them a chance to win. So, you know, 21 quality starts, that's not bad. The Eagles wish they had that many. They only had 16 through the, you know, the numbers that I had checked, and they didn't get one on Sunday. So, so I guess if you're the games that get blown out are just losses from the start, and then the other ones, they keep close and they edge them out.
Yep.
And the records are right.
They're doing the opposite of what happened to the Hawks last year.
Yeah. It's kind of weird. All right. Well, good luck to them. Good luck to Luis. And obviously they're going to start playing interleague, starting Tuesday. So let's talk about that.
We're entering the, 10th year.
Yeah. Geez. Who do you see winning the interleague session this time? It's always been, I shouldn't say always, because one time, and this was 2009, I think we discussed before. Mm. No, and it was 2009 that the Central League won the overall, head-to-head matchup against the Pacific League. But only once has a Central League team won the interleague session, and that was the Giants 2 years ago.
Right.
I don't know. I guess I'll go first. I'm going to pick two teams that I think have a good shot to win. And one of them has traditionally played very poorly in interleague play, and that's the Hiroshima Carp.
Mm.
And their overall, in 240 interleague games, I found another site online that has all the information. I shouldn't say all the information that I'm giving you today I found online. And at this site it says the Hiroshima Carp are 96 and 134. That's a winning percentage of 417. That is really not bad, not good. And they had one of the longest scoreless inning streak in their club history during interleague. When they got shut out, I think
Fighters. You mean scoreless streaks?
Scoreless innings. They went a number of innings without scoring a run, and they broke it in one particular game. But yeah. But I like them. I like what they're doing right now. I think they're the real deal. I think they're for real, and I think they have a real shot. The other team is Oryx. So I'm going with the two teams that are now at the top of the standings in their respective leagues. I think Oryx has a really good shot. I think they have enough balance, enough pitching. They're getting some power production. Itoi's been hitting really well the whole season. Mm. So I'm picking one. I'm looking for one of those two teams to emerge as the interleague session winner. What about you?
I'm going to pick the Hawks because I'm just going to go with the best team. And to me, it doesn't matter that the Marines the Buffaloes happen to be in first place right now. I don't really see.
Actually, I'm not picking them because they're in first place right now. I'm picking them because of the way they're playing.
Okay.
But they just happen to be in first place.
Right. Okay. My thinking is, well, yeah, but I also look at all the things they've done.
Mm.
And they're very unfortunate to be any, you know, it's kind of unfortunate there's even a race right now.
You know, you say that, but I don't think so. I think they've had trouble in the rotation. And
yeah, they have issues. But I'll tell you, I mean, they do two things really well, which is they play defense really well and they hit really well.
Mm.
What they don't do, their pitching is a question mark. Basically, Oryx is the other side. Oryx has got the great pitching.
Right.
And the very good hitting. Although some of the hitting is due to their ballpark, but that's another story. Their pitching is, their pitching is outstanding. Their defense is, mediocre.
Yeah.
And I like, one of the things I like about, interleague play. Well, you know, the expression, I hate to, you know, I don't want to defend cliches, but, you know, I know, we live on cliches as writers.
Shoot anybody who's trying to erase or delete a cliche. I know. They're cliches for a reason. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But, you know, defense doesn't go into slumps. And, of course, defense, you know, defense does go. They all say speed doesn't go into slumps. But, yeah, defense is something that's going to be is going to translate very well to interleague. And I think offensively it tends to be worse. I also want to pick a Pacific League team just because I think the Pacific League is a better league. And I think, there's pretty good evidence for that.
Mm.
As I was telling you before the show, they've now played 1,440 games.
Collectively, yes.
Okay, collectively over 9 seasons. So what that means, now the Pacific League has won 733, the Central League 660, there have been 47 ties.
Domination, man.
Domination. Well, yeah, okay, 55, what is that, a 526 winning percentage against a 474 winning percentage. Okay. Now let's say, you know, I'm not going to make a big deal of a definitive study of this because I didn't do one. But let's say that was one team. Let's say you had a single team playing 1,440 games, mm-hmm. and they had a record of 474 winning percentage like the Central League did. What are the chances that that 474 team is actually a 500 team just playing badly?
Mm.
Just bad luck.
Not over 1,000 games.
Over 1,440 games.
Yeah.
The answer is 2.68%. A chance that a team that with a 50% chance of winning every game would in fact go 474 over 1,444 games.
Mm.
So basically what, you know, in a very kind of a rough shorthand, it's a kind of a rough shorthand analysis. It's not really a full model. In order to do that, you know, you'd want two leagues that were essentially balanced.
Right.
You know, with weak teams and strong teams, but overall their strength would be the same. And then you would run the whole schedules. But, on a very shorthand, quick note, if that were one team of all, if the two leagues, each team was exactly the same strength and they were all 500 in both leagues, the chances that the Central League would have a record as bad as they do is 2.68%. Now, so I'm just going to say that with that rudimentary analysis, there is a 2.68% chance that the Central League is actually as good or better than the Pacific League.
Okay.
Use it over the last 9 years.
Yeah.
And a 97% chance that the Pacific League is better than the Central League.
Mm.
So with that, I think that is makes it very unlikely for a Central League team to win. Now, let's say I'm off by a magnitude of 10, and there's actually a 26% chance that the Central League is as good as the Pacific League.
That's still not a big chance.
That's not a big chance. So I'm gonna stick to my guns and say I think the Pacific League is a better league. I think the team that is, by my opinion, is the best team in the Pacific League, and the best team in NPB is the Hawks, and I think they're going to win the title this year.
Right. The Hawks.
The Buffaloes are playing well. I'll give it that. They're probably a toss-up. The Rush McCarper also playing very well, and you got to give. I think there's a good chance they could win as well too. But I would probably cut that as. Maybe 45% for the Hawks, maybe 35% for the Buffaloes, and maybe 20% or 15%
for the Carbon. Too many numbers. Stop with the numbers.
So the biggest share, the most likely is going to be the Hawks, and I'd say second most likely the Buffaloes.
All right, the Hawks have won 4 times in interleague. The Oryx Buffaloes have won once. The Lotte mm-hmm. Marines have won twice. The Fighters have won once, and the Giants have won once. So let's see how it plays out. Let's go on to another topic, which is Malkoon's streak. Masahiro Tanaka, we all know, won the 24 games in one season, and that was last mm-hmm. year. But mm-hmm. two guys were chasing his record. Tomoyuki Sugano pitched a really good game on May 11th and mm-hmm. got shut out and lost 1-0. And mm-hmm. so he is now no longer among the undefeated. There's only one guy, and that's Yuki Nishi of the Oryx Buffaloes. He had 7 wins and 7 starts. His ERA is less than 1. He's having a better start than Mokun did to his record season in 2013. I don't know. I don't think it's possible, but I like the fact that he's out there. He's got 2 good role models who I think he was able to study because he was able to look at Tanaka a lot last year. And he's got Chihiro Kaneko, who had the 2nd best probably season last year. And that's a guy on his team. Mm-hmm. And he already got lucky. He pitched a scoreless game that went into the 8th inning up in Tohoku against the Eagles this past week and somehow managed to keep the game scoreless keep the Eagles off the scoreboard. And they scrambled up a run in the 9th inning and got him the lead. And the closer came in and finished it up and got him a win. And we had a listener who wrote in and talked about the fact that Masahiro Tanaka was gone from the Eagles and that the team had lost his 24 wins. And I contended, no, they lost his 30 or 28 or whatever the number was of quality starts, consecutive quality starts that he brought out there. Because you don't always win even though you throw a quality start. There's no guarantee.
Well, and again, they don't lose 28. You know, they don't lose that many starts. They lose that, but, you know, you go call a guy up from the minors and he might give you a quality start in 10. So it might be 27 quality starts, you know. So it's not the whole thing. Right. Yeah, and I would point out for a couple of things. First of all, yes, he's having a better start than Mokun did last year, even better than Kazuhisa Makita did, as we know from the trivia question two weeks ago, who was the last PL pitcher of the month before Nishi, whose name wasn't Masahiro Tanaka.
Right.
And he's having a better Nishi's having a better season than Tanaka's having this year. Okay. Of course, bigger than Tanaka's start is not a big deal. The biggest thing about Tanaka's start wasn't the start, because he wasn't even the pitcher of the month last year, but the finish. You know, after his last no decision was in Interleague.
Yeah.
So, you know, after that, it was, you know, just put the win up there.
Well, now, I mean, Nishi, you know, the 7 wins and 7 starts, just to point out how rare that is, it tied an Oryx club record for one of the best starts in club history.
Well, it is.
That's rare in itself.
7 straight wins, and I mean, not 7 straight decisions. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Now, you also would know that he's 9-0 in his last decisions, because he won his last decisions last year. However, the last 2 games that he didn't get a decision in, neither were quality starts.
Okay.
Which is something that you can't really, you know, which also sort of drags him away from the Masahiro Tanaka group. Well, the other thing
I don't want to compare and say that he's as good. I'm just saying he's on the road, he's on the path. I don't think he's the same kind of pitcher in any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, this is the thing about wins, and they're just fickle. You know, these streaks require that your team score runs, because you can pitch 0-0 but not win. And you, in order to win, especially in the Pacific League where you don't bat, you have to get help. This is why I talked about at the end of last year when I said whose feat was better in 2013, Coco Ballantyne's or Masahiro Tanaka's, and I said Coco Ballantyne because he's the one who got up in the batter's box and hit those home runs by himself. But as well as Tanaka pitched, he needed help all over the field to get those wins.
Okay.
So
I got nothing to say about that other than, okay, that's John's opinion.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Good.
The interesting thing here is, you know, can he chase him? Well, first of all, Oryx's defense isn't going to be helping him. The Eagles, as bad as the Eagles' defense is this year, and it's been pretty mediocre, it was better than average last year. And this year, Oryx has been average. I mean, they're not bad, but they're not very good either.
Yeah.
So their defense isn't helping the pitchers. The pitchers are doing most of that on their own. I mean, they have some good fielders, no doubt, but it's hard to get those wins when you don't have as much help.
Well, I just wanted to acknowledge it because he is still undefeated, and you know, it is, like I said, only 7 games, but it's an impressive start. We'll see how it goes when Interleague starts.
Okay.
All right, a couple notes. Matt Merton moved past Randy Bass of the Hanshin Tigers. for all-time hits among Tigers imports. He got a single on Sunday in his final at-bat in the eighth inning, and congratulations to Matt Merton because he's also a friend of the show.
He is indeed. He's pretty much, we got a reserved seat for him whenever we need an interview.
Well, whenever he wants. He can tweet up, I guess. He can contact us.
Indeed.
Anyway, but he got his 744th hit today with the club. He's only in his fifth year. I think Randy Bass played with the Tigers from 1983 to 88.
Mm-hmm.
So he amassed that in a little bit more time, but
season, too, because it was 130 game seasons.
And I think he left in the middle of the season, or not? Yeah, so he didn't finish that last season entirely. But still, I think if you count up that bats, I think Matt has gotten there a lot faster. Remember, he in his first year in 2010 set the Central League all time record with 214 hits.
Matt's only the second player in Japanese history to get 200 hits in 130 games or less.
Yeah.
So, because he got his 200th hit, I think, in game 128 or 129.
Yeah. Yeah.
As soon as they made the schedule longer, Japan started having, you know, Ichiro started having company in the 200 when it was 130 games and 200 hits was Ichiro's alone.
Yeah. Yeah. Congratulations also go out to Ernesto Mejia of the Saber Lions, who cracked a home run in his first at-bat in Japan on the first team. And he had also hit a home run, I guess it was in a practice game with the farm team. And so on Thursday, hit this home run. He became the 55th player in NPB history to homer in his first at-bat on the first team.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the 22nd foreign player to do that and the 6th Lions player to do that in history. So congratulations to him. And you said, I remember as soon as I saw that he had hit a home run, you said, this guy's good. And I remember that you said that because you said that on the show when they signed him.
Oh, when they signed him, yes, I was very, I liked him. And I think the Braves liked him too. They just, he was in a situation similar to Luis Cruz where the Braves thought the world of him, but they had no place to play him.
Mm, all right. All right, so congratulations to Mr. Mejia. So let's go to fielding questions. All right, and again, our buddy Dave in Baltimore has a question. And like I said last week, this was left over from the previous week. So got lots of content from Dave in Baltimore. We appreciate it, buddy. And stay on the road. And I remember he said once before he heard us mention it, his name on the show and almost drove off the road because he listened while he's driving to work. So be careful.
Don't do that.
He says, some of Robert Whiting's older books mention doubleheaders being played in Japan. When did NPB stop having doubleheaders and why?
Okay. Now, the first question is, when did they stop having doubleheaders? Now, they still, first of all, the reason why they stopped is easier than the date of when they stopped, because there still potentially can be. They stopped having doubleheaders because the union said, we're not going to work. It's not good working conditions. The union were against it, and NPB doesn't like to take on the union if it doesn't involve money. So that's basically the reason they have reduced them. The last doubleheader that was scheduled as a makeup was September 30th, 2007. But the game between the Yokohama Bay Stars and the Yakult Swallows was rained out. And so they rescheduled it differently. They weren't able to do it as a doubleheader. So that was that. That was the last time a game was scheduled. The last actual doubleheader in Japan was October 10th, which, as you in Japan know, is Sports Day. And that was between the Bay Stars and the Chunichi Dragons.
What year? 1998. Wow.
That would have been the year the Bay Stars last won the Central League.
And the Japan Championship.
And they went on to win the Japan Series. And the last specific league doubleheader was the day before on October 9th in 1998. And that was between Oryx and Seibu at Seibu Dome.
Okay.
So there you have it.
Alright, next question is from the NPB tracker, Patrick Newman from the Bay Area.
Hey Patrick,
what's up,
buddy?
And he wants to get both of our responses on this question. He says, pitcher Shohei Ohtani faces batter Shohei Ohtani. Let's say 4 plate appearances. Who comes out ahead? Well, Patrick, geez, man, you give us 4 plate appearances. I mean, if he goes 2 for 2, is that coming out ahead? I don't know. I would say 5 plate appearances if I were asking the question.
Yeah, well, that's a big sample size, 5. Let's skip all of the 4. Let's go to 4.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, if a guy comes out hitting 500 in 4 plate appearances, I don't know if that's good or bad because it really doesn't tell you that much. I don't know that 3, I'm sorry, I don't know that 5 would do anything different, but.
Yeah, let's say 1,000. That's something useful.
Mm.
But anyway, he did say 4, so I think essentially how it would affect how, you know, who the defense was playing behind him. If it was the Hawks, he might go 1 for 4 with 1 punch out. I mean, often as not. And if it was the Fighters, he'd probably go 2 for 4 as often as not.
Mm.
With 1 double. Of course, his hit would be either a single or a double.
Yeah.
And he'd probably strike out once or twice.
Yeah.
The thing is that, you know, who'd get the better? I think he does have a shutout now, which makes it interesting, but I think he's still a better, you know, he's been a consistent hitter so far.
Mm.
I think he's still a better hitter than he is a pitcher. And, I have to think he'd come out, would he come out ahead? Yeah. I think he's a good enough hitter, and hitters are probably the biggest factor in the result that happens. If the pitcher puts the ball, gives him a chance to hit, you know, puts the ball over the strike zone, right, the hitter's going to decide what happens more right. often than not.
All right. I think Ohtani the batter knows the weaknesses and strengths of Ohtani the pitcher. Now, you're going to say probably that so does Ohtani the pitcher know the strengths of the batter, but the pitcher has to throw the ball over the plate at some point to get him out. So I think that if that advantage goes to the hitter, and that means all he has to do is guess the pitch, which he doesn't have to guess because he knows himself. And so he only has to look for location. And since he knows the weaknesses, that's where Ohtani, the pitcher, is going to attack. So he already knows the weakness. He already knows location. He knows the pitch. So I'm saying that in four plate appearances, it's only a matter if the ball falls in or not. He's not going to strike out. He's going to have a walk, 2 hits, and a pop-up. So I think Ohtani, the hitter, comes out on top. And I say that because nothing is guaranteed in hitting. Even if you put the ball in play, doesn't mean you're going to get a hit. But I think
you're facing the Fighter. So much yeah. I should just give you a hit.
But I don't think he's going to take himself deep.
That's just too weird.
So I don't think that's a concern.
Well, I think he's going to be thinking too much. You know, he's going to be up there. He's probably going to go up batting right-handed.
Gosh, I really want to get myself out on the curveball, but I know I can hit the curveball down and in. So what am I doing?
He's probably thinking, I want to make this guy look good.
I thought you were going to say look stupid, and you went the other way. And speaking of...
I make everybody look good, so I'm used to that.
All right. All right. Well, thank you very much, Patrick, and thank you very much, Dave. We appreciate the questions.
Thanks, guys, and look forward to hearing from you both soon.
All right. Anyone else, send your questions by email to yakyujohn, that's yakyujohn @gmail.com, or leave us a note on the Facebook page. Thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball. One World Sports is the exclusive home of the Yomiuri Giants in North America and features live coverage of all Giants home games. Please contact your local cable provider to find out how you can watch One World Sports.